From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. There are a few American-based religions that put a big emphasis on converting people to the faith. The biggest, as you might imagine, is the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. But if you set aside for a moment the idea of spreading a religious message, the scholar Patrick Mason says sending young people on missions is a brilliant sociological move for Mormons. You take kids at the time when they're most likely to ditch religion, when they're normally leaving home, headed out on their own, and you put them in one of the most intense religious experiences there is, going door to door. But everything changes, and so apparently is the experience of going on a Mormon mission, and that's what we're talking about today, the expectations, the strategy, the new role played by young women. Join us after the news.
Friend, follow, and join us on social media to stay connected with the latest goings-on. Find out who's on Radio West tomorrow, what's happening on Capitol Hill, and get a glimpse behind the microphones with pictures and videos of station staff and special events. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, and Twitter. Search for KUER 90.1.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. The Salt Lake Tribune reported this past weekend that Utah's colleges are bracing themselves for the Mormon missionaries who are back home now and going to school. This is the first wave of young people who went out since the church lowered the age for men and women a few years ago. Changing the age when women could go was a big deal around here and throughout the LDS Church, and it seems to be having more than just a practical impact. In reporting the change, Laurie Goodstein of the New York Times mentioned it could rewrite the narrative of some young women's lives. And it's just what Mormon leaders hope, actually, for all missionaries. But that experience seems to be changing. And today in the program, that's what we're talking about. Among the questions we're asking, have expectations changed for young Mormons contemplating a mission? Is there more sensitivity for those who don't fit into that conventional model? And is the focus for missionary work in the church itself changing? Is the age-old practice of knocking doors really working anymore, if it ever really worked at all? Joining us today in the program is Patrick Mason. He's the Howard W. Hunter Chair of Mormon Studies at Claremont Graduate University, and he's joining us from a studio there on the campus of Claremont College. Patrick Mason, welcome back. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks. Good morning, Doug.
And Gregory Prince is back with us, an independent historian. He is co-author of the book David O. McKay and the Rise of Modern Mormonism. He's back joining us from NPR member station WAMU in Washington, D.C. And Gregory Prince, welcome back.
Thanks, Doug.
We've had you on a lot lately. I think it's like
yes,
number three
have.
after. Well, I'm glad you joined us. I should also mention at Video West this week we're going to be featuring a short film that we're putting up, in fact, today. That tells one missionary story. We'll give you details about that a little bit later as we go along on the program. Well, Patrick Mason, help us, and Gregory Prince, but I'll put this to Patrick first. Help us get our bearings here a little bit first. Just how important is missionary work for Mormonism? I guess that seems like an obvious question, at least those who are aware of Mormonism, but give us a sense of how important it is.
Well, I think it's hugely important, Doug. I mean, it's the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints has been a missionary faith really from day one. It has always expanded through sending out missionaries to proclaim the message, to share the Book of Mormon with people, to invite people to become baptized. I mean, this goes back. I mean, there were really missionaries going out even before there was a church, people who were spreading the news that there was a new prophet, Joseph Smith, and a new book of scripture, the Book of Mormon. And it's remained hugely important. It's, if anything, missionary work has become even more important in Mormonism over the past half century or so, or certainly since World War II. More of a global emphasis of missionaries going out. And this is when we've seen the exponential growth of Mormonism, much of which is attributed to increase in converts coming in because of these missionaries going out all over the world. So the Mormonism that we know today is very much a product of missionary work. It's also the main thing that people know oftentimes about Mormonism. It's these two young men with white shirts and ties showing up on their doorstep.
So which do we have a sense, which is more important for Mormon leaders, getting new members, which, as you said, was crucial for establishing Mormonism in as a faith, or strengthening the relationship with the ones who are already in. And I mean, you know, in other words, as you say, the church has always thought it was very important to send missionaries out. But what's more important to them, getting new converts or converting the ones who go, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I think both are really important, but I would argue that especially now, that missions really are part of the sociological genius of Mormonism, that today, of course, convert baptisms are really important, and when the church talks about missionary work, the main way that it talks about it is in proclaiming the gospel and seeking converts, those who would be interested in joining the faith. But really, I think the primary achievement of the Mormon mission program over the past few decades is in solidifying the faith of those who go out to serve. You take these young men, and now increasingly in large numbers, young women, who are at the very time in their life when most other people are leaving the churches that they grew up in. They're now on their own, they go to college, or they're off living on their own, and they stop going to mom and dad's church. Well, there's no reason to believe that wouldn't be true for Mormons as well, but instead, you have this amazing program of Mormon missions that sends them out, and now, not only are they not leaving church, they're spending 70 hours a week out spreading the word, and it instills in them this deep devotion and commitment to the church. It also is a terrific form of leadership training. They learn the doctrines of the church, become committed to the doctrines of the church as they teach it. So it really serves as much as anything to convert the people who are sent out to convert others.
Do you have a sense of whether or not that's just a nice after effect to the real purpose of getting new converts, or is this a conscious strategy by leaders who are saying what you said, hey, they're really vulnerable at this time, let's really get them engaged and in an intense way at this stage?
Well, I mean, I can't cite any church authorities. I mean, they can speak for themselves. But I think even this recent age change would suggest that they would feel that there's something going on, that instead of men going out when they're 19, now allowing them to go out when they're 18, which means a lot of them are going right out of high school. That suggests that maybe there was a feeling of some slippage, that they were losing some kids after high school, and this was a way to keep them. I suspect the same thing would be true as part of the calculation of having women go when they're 19 instead of 21, recognizing this is a way to keep them within the fold.
Do we have a sense of... I think you'll hear skeptics who say that the program then is just designed to pressure a young person into a life track early on. Is that, Gregory Prince, I want to hear you on this point. Is that right, sort of?
Well, to get back to your earlier question, the church in its mission statements has four elements. One of those is to proclaim the gospel, to do proselytizing. A second is to strengthen the members. And those two may get varying degrees of emphasis from time to time. So from a very early time, I think that the church leaders realized that they were getting a twofer for this, that the missionaries who were coming back were changed in a very positive way for their having gone out, whether or not their efforts resulted in convert baptisms.
Okay, so let me... I want to get a sense of some history here. Let's compare the experience of the Mormon missionary who goes out, you know, in the 21st century to another time. Because for decades now, there's been this expectation that young men, and of course later women, would go on missions. Gregory Prince, give us a sense of when that really kicked in. I mean, there's a lot of social pressure. I think people who are in the culture, who understand the culture here, understand the intense level of social pressure for young men in particular to go on missions when they turn now, well, when they graduate from high school now. But has it always been so? I mean, when did that really kick in?
Well, if you go back to the beginnings of Mormonism, it was the adult men who did the proselytizing, period. It's not until the late decades of the 19th century that any women went out, and that was a very rare event. Then even through the outbreak of World War II, most of the men who went out were mature men. In the early 1950s, they dropped the missionary age from 21 to 19 for men, and the emphasis then began to have the young men going on missions. I went on a mission in 1967 to Brazil. It was really a rare event even then that a young woman would go on a mission. We had about 160 missionaries in our mission, and four of them were women. So it changed markedly in the 1950s when they dropped the age from 21 to 19. Then in the latter decades of the 20th century, there became more of an influx of female missionaries, and I think that may have been unintentional, and at times it seemed to have been unwanted. I can recall an occasion where the church president, Gordon Hinckley, spoke in general conference and was trying to tamp down the number of female missionaries at the same time that he acknowledged that two of his granddaughters were on missions.
Right.
Then the most recent change, of course, was dropping the male age from 19 to 18 and the female age from 21 to 19, and that really opened the floodgates.
But I guess what I'm getting at is the idea of social pressure, because I want to sort of get around to this question of whether or not young people, how intense is that pressure to go? There's this kind of social stigma that seems to have been attached to it. At another time, maybe it's always been the case, and I'm wondering if you have a sense of what that's like, the pressure for young people, young men in particular. We'll get to the question of how the influence of young women going on missions. That seems remarkable. We'll get to that in a moment. But this social pressure, Patrick Mason, do you have a sense of how that's changing? Is it still pretty intense for young people to go?
Well, I think so. I mean, and as Greg said, it didn't used to be that way. I mean, going on a mission several decades ago would have been the exception rather than the rule. But now, especially since the 1970s and 80s, there was a church president, Spencer W. Kimball, who talked about every member a missionary, and there was this real push that every young man, that it was a priesthood responsibility, and that every worthy young man should go out on a mission. And now we've seen one, possibly two generations of Mormons who have gone through with that message. It's a consistent message. It's built into almost every lesson. It's part of the curriculum that when young men go to Sunday school class, when they go to church, this is the message they're hearing, is to stay on the straight and narrow as teenagers so they can get on a mission and then come home and finish their schooling and get married and go on with their life. But the orientation of the young men's program of the church is to get young men on missions. And so that does create tremendous social pressures. It creates a certain kind of spiritual pressures, this expectation that if you're a good Mormon boy, that means that you're going to end up on a mission. And now the system works for the people who go, and they feel affirmed, and they many of them have these terrific experiences, and you know, the system basically works. But the question then becomes, what about those who choose not to go or are not able to go because of choices or actions that they've done as teenagers? Is there a place for them in Mormonism? I think the answer is yes, but it does become harder for them because they have gone against what is this clearly established social norm.
And do you have a sense of whether that's changing? I mean, that social norm, I mean, you hear from time to time, you hear people talking about how, you know, maybe a Mormon mission isn't for this young person. And that seems like you would never have heard that in the decades past. I mean, but I can't tell whether you think that expectation is changing, that people are starting to say, maybe this experience isn't, in fact, for everyone. Gregory Prince, can you tell?
Well, backing up just a bit, I think there was a differential effect when they lowered the age, and that was that among the young women, I think that the pressure was coming from peers and not from the church. The expectation had been there for decades for the young men to go out. It was not there from the hierarchy for the young women to go out. But as that age was dropped, there was an enormous peer pressure among the young women to go out, and that really flooded the system, and I think beyond their expectations.
Patrick Mason, you've said that it's hard to sort of quantify this or maybe prove this, but you feel a sense that the church could possibly be hemorrhaging young people if it weren't for the missionary program. Would you say something more about that?
Yeah, well, we see that throughout other American religious groups. Right now, and this has been commented on by lots of scholars, it's one of the main areas of study right now for those of us who study American religion. The single fastest growing demographic in American religion today is the rise of the so-called nuns. And we're not talking about the Catholic women and habits. We're talking about nuns, N-O-N-E-S, people who, when they're asked, what is your religious affiliation, say, none of the above. And oftentimes they'll follow up on that by saying that they're spiritual but not religious. These are people who have chosen to either disaffiliate or have just no affiliation with any organized denomination or church or mosque. And it's especially pronounced among young people, people who are 30 and under, especially the so-called millennials. Some polls show that it's upwards of 50% of those people are unaffiliated or call themselves spiritual but not religious. Now, that is remarkable, and it's changing the landscape of American religion. And there's I don't see any reason to believe why Mormons would be immune to this. Now, Mormonism does have a remarkable socialization system and has a remarkable system of teaching its young people the doctrines of the church with early morning seminary and a remarkable youth program. So there's lots of ways that Mormonism focuses on keeping its young people, but they also are part of the general culture. And there's no reason to believe that they would be immune to those general cultural trends. And so the mission program is one way, in many ways, I think a very remarkable way and an effective way of addressing this tidal wave in American religion for young people.
So do you have a sense, Patrick Mason, how young people are seeing the millennials, let's put it that way, certainly this younger generation? Because you've talked about how the way they're seeing the Mormon church experience, just the day-to-day experience, or the 3 hours anyway that they experience church on Sunday, in the case of some young people, are seeing it as possibly irrelevant to their lives in some cases. Certainly terrifically boring is the concern that you hear from time to time. I wanted to give you a chance to talk a little bit about that, whether this message that Mormons have used is relating to the young people of this generation.
Well, I think it's a big concern, and one of the things, you know, of course, not all millennials are the same, but
sure.
But overall, as a generation, there is a kind of activist impulse. There's a desire to want to go out and change the world, to go out and do something, not just sit and hear something, but they want to be engaged in some way, shape, or form. And so I think there's a question about whether the standard model of the 3 hour block of Sunday services is going to be sufficient. And even the forms of religious indoctrination through early morning seminary and so forth, whether that's going to be sufficient or whether the church also needs to find ways for these people to be engaged. Now, I think the LDS Church is terrific at doing a lot of good in the world with its humanitarian programs, and every congregation is involved in service projects and these kinds of things. But is there a way that there's a kind of disconnect between the church? You know, the church sends out millions of dollars of humanitarian aid, but does the individual parishioner, the individual ward member, especially this millennial, do they really feel connected to that? They read the press release and they feel good that their church is doing it, but they're not the one out building homes or alleviating poverty or changing the world. So I do think missions are one way to get them out on the front lines, but also it isn't going to be enough, especially when they come back and their idealism is still intact. But is that those 3 hours on Sunday going to be enough to channel that idealism?
Gregory Prince, what do you think about that? I mean, the story you hear a lot these days is that the church is operated, this is some the contention of some, it's being operated on a model that may be, you know, dated. It's pretty top-down, very male-oriented. Some of the ideals about modesty, you know, things like beards and certain elements of popular culture seen as kind of, you know, dated, but also superficial measures of a person's character. I mean, what do you make of the what Patrick Mason was talking about in terms of the challenges the LDS Church is dealing with and relating to its young people?
Well, Doug, you used the word hemorrhage. I think that is an appropriate word, but I think you need to look at the hemorrhage as being bifocal. The reduction in the age at which they serve missions, even though the intention was never stated publicly appears to be to try to prevent defections from the church by calling these young men and young women on missions, often before they even get into college, where their minds are exposed to things that they weren't necessarily exposed to at home. The other hemorrhage is on the other end of the mission experience. This was first brought to my attention about 15 years ago in a casual conversation with one of the church general authorities. He said there is an alarming rate of inactivity among our returned missionaries. Now, I didn't probe, he didn't give me a number, but in the year since then, I've brought this subject up dozens of times to people at various levels, including to other general authorities. And the answer has always been between one-third and one-half of the returned missionaries will become inactive in the church. The most recent figure, which came from one of the general authorities, was half of them within 5 years. To me, that is an almost scandalous number and one that should be causing panic at a high level.
And is it?
I don't know.
You can't tell. I mean, I guess the question would be, are they changing the... this is one of the things that Patrick Mason just mentioned. He's, you know, talking about, you see these young people hearing about the, you know, tens, hundreds of millions of dollars of humanitarian aid that's being sent out there. They're going out proselytizing as opposed to, you know, dispersing food kits and talking about service and those kinds of things. Are you seeing any attempt by church leaders to shift that focus away maybe from the proselytizing element, more towards service and those kinds of things?
Yes, and I think it's the most refreshing and perhaps the most promising development in decades in this arena. There is a program that is being implemented mission by mission called Just Serve that takes a more formal approach to service than the missionaries had been taking. For several years, they have been allowed to spend, I think it's up to 10 hours per week in some type of approved community service. That is being standardized within the Just Serve program. In addition to engaging the missionaries, the church is asking local members to become more involved in formal service programs. Most recent numbers that I heard on this are really quite astounding, that the church average is that 13% of full-time missionaries will return from their missions prematurely for a variety of reasons. In the missions that have implemented Just Serve, that number drops to 6%. So that right there should tell you that there's something really important that they're on the verge of, and I hope that there's follow-up there, because I see almost endless possibilities if not only there is a more formal engagement with service. I would dream for the time when a full-time service mission was an option for a young man or a young woman. I think they could change the world, and I think they'd change the church too.
Patrick Mason, what do you think about that? It seems like what I'm getting, though, is the sense that maybe this going door to door hasn't really been about getting converts anyway. It's like it's just this experience that some LDS church leaders think you give to young people as an opportunity to experience hardship. Like, go out, build your identity, get the door slammed in your face, and this will give you a sense of connection and engagement. That's important. So that seems like an obstacle to really changing, retooling the system.
I think that's right. I mean, you know, there's the old saying, if it don't kill you, it'll only make you tougher. And there's something about that, of having a door slammed in your face and going from door to door and talking to people who don't want to talk to you. I mean, that's been the way that Mormon missionary work has been done for a very long time. And there is a certain kind of character building that goes along with it. It's also a deep part of Mormon identity formation. Whether good or bad, I mean, it's true that from the very earliest years of the church, part of what it means to be Mormon is to be, at least in one's own view, to be persecuted for one's beliefs, for standing up for the gospel and being rejected by the world. Now, of course, in the 19th century, that took the form of violence, not just against Joseph Smith and the early Mormons, but against missionaries who went out. Missionaries were occasionally killed and mobbed and so forth. That doesn't happen so much today. Occasionally, a missionary runs into some kind of violence, but mostly it's this kind of standard model of rejection. And that actually, it's sort of counterintuitive because you would expect, oh, that must be terrible for these young people, and they must really lose hope. And certainly that's true for some of them. But for others, this is exactly what builds their faith. I mean, Jesus said it in the Sermon on the Mount, blessed are those who are persecuted, you know, for my sake. And there is this deep sense in Mormonism that when you are rejected, that actually is part of the testimony of the truthfulness of what you're talking about. And so when you lose that, when you take away that kind of hard edge of the Mormon mission experience, are you softening something about Mormon identity, which has been so successful in building a core Mormon membership over the years? So I'm with Greg. I think more service and more formalized service opportunities. Look, there's almost, you know, there's 80,000 plus full-time Mormon missionaries out there. Imagine if they were doing things to alleviate poverty, you know, working on global health issues, development issues. I mean, the potential there is really remarkable, but you also have to ask the question, do you lose something in the process if you take away that proselytizing aspect? Huh.
So I'm not sure if you know Gregory Prince, but is that the conversation that's going on in the upper levels, is we can't just ditch knocking on doors because it's an important part of the process? We can't just go and have them disperse all of this humanitarian aid. We have to let them engage directly. I mean, do you sense that conversation is going on in the high levels of Mormonism?
Yes, I do sense that it is going on. Knocking on doors has been declared dead many times over the past several decades, and it always seems to come back to life. In 2 years in Brazil, I never knocked on one door. I thought it was the least productive thing that I could do, and I always found something else that was more productive, and find that a lot of people agree with that. I think you have to take into account, though, that you've got a 60-year differential between the policymakers and the missionaries in the field. And some of these traditions that the older church leaders have carried with them throughout their lives die very slow, painful deaths. I would love to see us abandon knocking on doors completely and never going back to it, because I think even if you're doing direct proselytizing activities, it's the least productive way. And I think that the downside of it is very large. I think that this is a counterproductive thing for our young missionaries to become involved in. When I talk to the 20-year-olds who are in the field, I live in Washington, D.C., they will routinely say that it's their least favorite thing, but it's the method of last resort when they run out of other ideas to do. I met recently with the head of AmeriCorps Vista. That's the Domestic Peace Corps. It's been around for 50 years this year. It has a total force of 8,000. And when I told Paul that we had a missionary force 10 times the size of his, he just rolled his eyes and said, in my dreams, what could I do with 80,000 people working full-time in humanitarian service? That's the option that we have.
801-585-WEST, the number to join the conversation. Let's take a call. Brady is with us in Salt Lake City. Brady, welcome.
Hi, Doug. Great to talk to you. I was a missionary, and subsequently, when I was about 30, I walked away from the church. But the biggest thing that held me in the church wasn't family. Maybe I had a family who was a little bit more understanding as far as that goes. It was the mission. It was the sort of commitments I had made. I read about the sunken cost fallacy in economics. You know, this idea that you put so much into something, you just have to see it through.
Yeah.
I that really pulled on me, and I mean, even to this day, the one place I sort of don't feel right about is those people I worked with and stuff. Yeah.
Brady, glad you called. So I guess Patrick and Gregory, before I get you to respond to that, let me read another one because we're getting a number of kind of experiential sort of things. This comes from Tyler, who says that his mission was instrumental in his leaving the LDS Church, became depressed, considered killing himself because of the struggling with the idea of trying to convert or teach people something I didn't know I believed myself. He eventually decided he didn't believe. He said he came home early. Now I'm one of those nuns. The majority of my friends have left the church as well. So I guess expressing, I guess this is the negative side, I suppose, of it all. I'm hoping we'll talk a little bit more about that sort of positive element that Patrick and Gregory have expressed. But can you give us a sense of what reaction to Brady, for example, who said, you know, he's going through the economics about it. And I guess his sense was that, yeah, I put a lot into it. It would be very difficult to leave. Patrick Mason?
I think there's really something to that. And it's not only church leaders, but also sociologists have commented on part of the success of Mormonism is that it's a high-demand religion. It asks a lot of you. This is another counterintuitive thing about religion. You'd think that the religions ask a lot of you should drive people away. But it's actually just the opposite. They're generally more successful at keeping people precisely because people are so invested in it. They pour themselves into it. It's not just like a bowling league or something like that. I mean, it's something that they pour their hearts and minds into. And so it is hard to walk away because they're so deeply tied to it. I mean, in regards to your second, to the email from Tyler, I believe, this is one of the concerns I have, especially about lowering the age, is that if the church is sending out all of these people, you know, over 80,000 people, and we're sending them right out of high school, are they emotionally prepared for that kind of experience with all of the rejection that comes with knocking on doors and so forth with the traditional missionary model? Are they spiritually prepared? Again, I think the youth program of the LDS Church is remarkable at teaching people about religion. We know that young Mormon people know more about their religion than any other young people in any other church. I mean, that's been statistically shown. But still, do they know enough? Do they believe enough? Are they confident enough? And if not, when we're throwing them out there as 18-year-olds, are we setting them up to fail? Are we setting them up to have bad experiences so they come home and they say, I just spent 2 years, I'm not sure what it was all about, and in fact, it didn't tie me more closely to this church. It actually, in some ways, alienated me from it. I think that's one of the risks of sending out younger people.
That is Patrick Mason. He is a professor of Mormon studies at Claremont Graduate University. Gregory Prince, an independent historian who focuses on Mormonism, also with us. I should mention this week Video West is featuring a film called Elder, which tells one missionary story. It's from 1974. Tom Clark served his mission in Italy. While he was there, he met a young communist man named Gianni, ended up with a heartrending decision whether to leave his church or leave his love. The film is directed by Utah filmmaker Jenea Gaudet, co-produced by Video West. You can see it at videowest.kuer.org. You can join us, 801-585-WEST. Our email address is radiowest@kuer.org. We're way late for a break. Sorry about that. We'll take a break and be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about how the Mormon missionary experience is changing with the times. We have with us the scholars Patrick Mason and Gregory Prince. Let's go back to the phones. Taylor with us in Salt Lake City. Taylor, hi.
Hi, how's it going?
Fine, thanks.
Hey, I just wanted to echo the sentiments that were said about just getting millennials more involved with service. You know, I went on a mission, and it was an incredible learning experience. You got to see people from so many different societies. I mean, I went to Chicago, which is a major melting pot. And I mean, it's fundamentally shaped a lot of values that I have in life, church, and just the kind of person that I want to be. But I will say that the service element was something that on my mission I had to kind of seek out myself, and having a more formalized program, both on a mission and then afterwards, as opposed to just making it kind of a on-the-side thing that just kind of happened as a way to get people together, I think is important. And I would appreciate that as, you know, 25-year-old millennial that is a member.
Right.
So I'll take my comments off the air.
Thanks, Taylor. Glad you joined us. Let's go back to the phones, and we'll get to that comment, I promise, in just a moment. Todd is with us in Provo. Todd, hi.
Hi, Howard. Listen, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question for your guest that I live in Provo, so I'm a long lifetime Mormon and all that, but when they did the change of the age in 2013, of course they had a surge, and a lot of that surge was women.
Yeah.
And they opened up a second facility next to BYU that took up apartment buildings to house all these new missionaries in the surge. And this really is a statistical question, but I honestly thought now at this point that their numbers would drop down quite a bit, but they continue to report high numbers, almost close to what they were when they made the age change. How confident are your guests in those numbers? I'm not, but the church continues to report above 80,000, and it just statistically to me doesn't make sense. Can you guys help me out with that?
And anyone know anything about that?
I think that those numbers are reliable, and I think what you are seeing, though this is my conjecture, is that this is the result of the positive peer pressure, particularly among the young women, that more of them want to go than would have gone in the past. So it isn't just that we would have had a temporary twofer where you would have double the number going for a while and then it would drop down to the same baseline as it had been previously. I think that there is a realistic hope that number in the 80s and maybe even higher is going to be maintained.
Glad you called. Thanks very much. We had a caller, Jeremy, who said, of course, door-to-door tracting. That's what it's called in Mormonism, tracting, door-to-door. Of course, that kind of missionary work works. He said, I joined at 18 in Australia when missionaries knocked on my door. So, of course, he's going to feel that way. David from Hiram also called to say that, to sort of make the point that he's not crazy about the shows we do on Mormonism in general, but that this isn't brainwashing. He says, 18 and 19 as an age can be a terrible age. These men are doing the opposite of what the world does. He says they are good men doing good in the world. He wanted to make that point. Here's a really good question that comes from, I'm not sure what the name is. This is from our discussion board. My son returned in March, this person writes, and is returning to school. And one thing we've seen from his mission, which was in 2013 through 2015, versus mine, which was in the 80s, is the very real increase of missionaries who are marrying after they've completed their mission. This, he says, is another direct impact and goes to solidifying young married returned missionaries, increasing activity levels, I think. Any sense of that, Patrick Mason, Gregory Prince, this idea that young people not only are encouraged to go on missions, but as soon as they get back, and you do hear this in Mormon culture all the time, get married. Any comments about that?
I think that's, you know, that's been a part of the message for a long time, is you go on a mission and then you come home and get married. I think what the person with the comment might be referring to is actually missionaries who meet their spouse on their mission. You know, with more young men and young women serving together, you know, without suggesting anything untoward. I mean, there's a kind of romance that sparks there, or at least the possibility for romance, because they've shared this deep experience together. I think that would only be natural, and I don't think that's to suggest that anything is anything funny is going on. It's just people who are serving together and then come home and decide that's the type of person that they want to marry. I also want to comment on the previous commenter who talked about that this isn't brainwashing, and I would agree. I mean, and hopefully nothing I've suggested would suggest that. I don't think this is about brainwashing. This is about religious formation. This is about socialization. Any successful institution or organization, if they want to keep people generation to generation, they have to be serious about formation. This is what religions do. They form people in the faith. And it's not, when I say indoctrination, I don't mean that as brainwashing. I'm talking about this is what a religion has to do if it wants to perpetuate the faith to the next generation. It has to indoctrinate them and form them in the faith. And Mormon missions are a tremendously successful way of doing so.
Gregory Prince, go ahead.
Speaking to that question about marriage, I think that would be an aberration on the larger vista of this, because if you look at the demographics, even as the age for missionary service dropped, the average age of marriage among Mormons continues to rise slowly. It's still lower than the national average, but it's on the same basic trajectory. And you see this concern voiced from the pulpit occasionally by the church leaders, almost panicked that they see that the kids aren't getting married at the age they used to. That's a factor of societal changes. They're still getting married, but they're waiting. And they have, I think, very good reasons for waiting. It's a tougher world to negotiate, particularly economically. And jumping right into a marriage when you're 20 or 21 may not be the best way to negotiate it.
801-585-WEST, the number two, join the conversation. I wonder, do you have any sense, Patrick Mason, this question to you. Does missionary work, just in general, not Mormon missionary work or evangelical missionary work or anything in particular, but does it work at that much anymore at all? I mean, certainly you see this in Western cultures, particularly in Western Europe, for example, moving beyond this kind of thing, not just organized religion, but responding to a street preacher or any kind of a missionary. Are people past the idea of really where missionaries really work all that well, just in a broad sense? Do you have any sense of that?
Well, I do think there's clear trends in Western Europe and in the United States. You know, we've talked about secularization. Are these societies secularizing? I mean, that's a big debate. Yeah. But I think it's really about it's about tactics and is. Are some of the old tactics still relevant? So the guy standing on the street corner, or the two young men coming to your door. I do suspect that some of those tactics are becoming irrelevant. People are suspicious of people coming to your door, right? Mm-hmm. As opposed to a few decades ago, that's what salesmen did, is they went door to door. People are suspicious of the guy standing up on the street corner. He's seen as kind of crazy. Whereas, you know, especially in the 19th and early 20th centuries, that was part for the course. So times change, and missionary work, as you say, for any religion, has to change. There's a lot more emphasis on online recruiting. I mean, on the dark side of this, we see that ISIS is actually being fairly successful at recruiting people online and crafting a very 21st century message for I would say nefarious purposes. Now, I wouldn't equate Mormon missionary work with ISIS recruiting on any level, but it's true that if you want to reach a 21st century audience, you have to employ 21st century tactics.
Here's a comment from Brian, who writes, here are some of the things I experienced on my mission in Ecuador in the late 1970s, an assault on my identity, guilt, self-betrayal, a compulsion to confess, a channeling of guilt, a release of guilt. Some call it socialization. Some call it brainwashing. He said, I left the church soon after I returned from my mission, never went back. But then he says, for me, however, I couldn't imagine a better 2 years for a 19-year-old. I can't tell if he's being sarcastic there or not. Here's a comment from Dayton, who writes, Professor Mason stated he was concerned that some 18-year-old men are going out on a mission not emotionally or spiritually prepared. The counsel that was given by general authorities was that the local bishop should ensure that the 18-year-old is prepared and that there's nothing wrong about waiting until 19 to serve. That was the counsel, but may not be the general practice. Do you have a sense that there's a disconnect, that they want them to be spiritually prepared, but the social pressure and whatever else might be going on is just getting them out there right now anyway? Patrick Mason?
Well, I'd say there's always been a tension here. On the one hand, absolutely, the church has never been interested at either a general level or a local level in sending kids out for whom they know it'll be a bad experience or who will not represent the church well. So they do have to go through a rigorous process of being interviewed, of passing a standard of worthiness, and so forth. But at the same time, there's also been an understanding, especially at the local level, that, hey, maybe a mission is going to be the best thing in the world for this kid. Yeah. You know, this kid is kind of on the border borderline maybe, and of church activity and whether or not they even really want to go and so forth. And so they may not be the obvious candidate, but for some people, their parents, maybe even their bishop, they'd say actually getting them out on the mission would be the very best thing in the world to convert them, to get them committed to the church. And so we see both of these things happening at the same time.
Patrick Mason with us, professor of Mormon studies at Claremont Graduate University. Gregory Prince also with us, an independent historian who focuses on Mormonism. At Video West this week, as I mentioned, we're featuring a short film that tells one missionary story. You can see it at videowest.kuer.org. We'll take another quick break and be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about how the Mormon missionary experience is changing with the times. The biggest change lately came a few years ago when church leaders lowered the age young women could go, also young men. It's had a big practical effect here in the Intermountain West. Also seems to be affecting the culture in interesting ways. We're just talking about change with Patrick Mason and Gregory Prince. Here's a comment from Melinda who writes, I guess it would be boring, of course, to have a positive show on how missionary service helps and blesses lives. Doug allows for a negative platform in most of his show. Nevertheless, the reality is sometimes that it's just a wonderful experience. I hope that point has been made. Patrick Mason, Gregory Prince, you seem to be making that point. It is very much a positive experience for a lot of people. Well, and I guess
let
the point
me weigh in on that,
yeah,
Doug,
please.
If I may. About a decade ago, I worked behind the scenes for quite a while with Helen Whitney, who was a PBS filmmaker, as she was doing her documentary, The Mormons. And towards the end of the production, she said, I've interviewed hundreds of your people. You have a good religion, but most of you borrow your religion. You need to own it. And that thought has stayed with me ever since. I think that a mission is the best potential period for owning one's religion. But it's like sending your kid off to college. It's one thing to have your child ready for college. The other is what happens when he or she gets to college. And I think that's what we're talking about, that missionary experience can be the most edifying thing of that young life, can be the experience that allows that person to own rather than borrow the religion, but it's in the details.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
as you have heard from some of your listeners, it's not a uniformly positive experience.
Yeah, Patrick,
I'd really echo that. What Greg is saying, that I mean, there are tremendous things that happen on a mission, and I would say probably for the majority of people the standard phrase is the best 2 years of their lives.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, just last night I was at a party for a young man who's on his way to Mozambique on a mission. I mean, he's going to have experiences there that he would never have in Southern California. He would meet people. He's going to come back a global citizen in a way that he never could had he stayed at home. And this is true for tens of thousands of young Latter-day Saints every year who go out and meet people, talk to people, engage with people in poverty, in a wide variety of life experiences. I mean, it is a life-transforming experience.
We have a caller, Suzanne, who called to say that she had served her mission in 1967. I'm not sure the circumstances. Said her mission was 27 months long. She said she knocked on doors and found it enormously gratifying, shaped her faith and her life. So that perspective certainly is out there. There's been some reporting on the problems that proselytizing focused churches are having in retaining the members who come into the field. This is not just a Mormon experience. In Mormonism, they've reportedly had huge rates of inactivity in Latin America, in other places, Africa, I think I may have read. How much of this is an issue for Mormon church leaders, this question of sending missionaries out there and then yet experiencing, in some cases, 80%+ inactivity rates in some of these places? Patrick Mason, you start.
Well, it's a big problem, and church leaders have recognized it as a big problem for a long time, and they've taken various measures to address it. President Gordon B. Hinckley, who is the former president of the church, spoke about this. He said, you know, there's no use in baptizing somebody who's not going to stay. And so this question of retention is significant, but it's not something that the church has been able to figure out, that these high rates of inactivity persist, not just internationally, but in the United States as well. The fact is that especially with the way that the Mormon missionary program is structured now, it's much easier to baptize somebody than to really make a convert, to really make somebody who's a Mormon, who has transformed their life, who's made a decision that they're going to be part of this culture and this religion for life. It's one thing to get somebody into the water of baptism, you know, 3 weeks after meeting the missionaries. It's another thing to make a lifetime commitment.
So Greg Prince raises the question of how you define success. One of the things you've talked about is that a lot of the people within Mormonism, Mormon leaders, are sort of clinging to this one metric of convert baptism is the sort of the only metric of success. Are you suggesting maybe there ought to be another one considered?
Oh, absolutely. I think that's the wrong metric to be looking at. If you look at retained growth, and I think the best accessible index of that is to look at the growth in the number of stakes or dioceses, then you get a much different picture. And if you work backwards from that number, you see that probably between 80 and 90% of the convert baptisms don't stay. So there's got to be a better way of doing that. If you look at the retained growth, the number of stakes year upon year, we're at about 1%, and some, if not most, of that is from children of record who are baptized. So we need to rethink the way we're doing business.
We're out of time. Patrick Mason, let me just put a quick question to you, though, finally. Because you've talked about this idea that Mormonism is this identity-based religion, and a big part of that is the missionary experience. So you're finally, give me a sense, do you think the church has the momentum, well, maybe the energy is a better way to put it, to kind of retool this already fine-tuned system? Do they have it in them to make a shift, to change?
Absolutely. I mean, I think within Mormonism, you've got people of vision, you've got people who want to see the system work. I mean, among the leadership, it's their grandchildren who are going out on missions. I mean, people are invested in this system and have a vision to transform it to make Mormon missions relevant for the 21st century and beyond. Absolutely.
Patrick Mason, Howard W. Hunter Chair of Mormon Studies at Claremont Graduate University, joined us from the studio there on the campus of Claremont College. Professor, thanks again for the time.
Thank you, Doug.
And Gregory Prince, an independent historian. He's co-author of the book David O. McKay and the Rise of Modern Mormonism, joined us from Washington, D.C. Gregory Prince, thanks again to you.
You're welcome, Doug.
And I'll mention Video West this week. Just now we're putting up a film called Elder, tells one missionary story from 1974, features Tom Clark. You can see it at videowest.kuer.org. Radio West is a production of KUER News, the program produced by Elaine Clark and Benjamin Bombard. I'm Doug Fabrizio.